guys, I'm Natalie and welcome to the Midnight Files. Welcome to part two in what really happened to Rachel Malloy. So we're just gonna take back off where we started from, where Rachel was in hospital and she is on life support. After the whole debacle at the hospital with the police never showing up and having to go through her daughter's organs being donated, Mandy felt like she would go to Rachel's apartment and see what was going on and have a look for herself. So she went there on the 5th of May or so, and when she arrived to the apartment, she was really shocked at what she found. When she walked in, she first saw Rachel's phone was on the couch, which she thought was really strange, again, because she felt like she always had it on her and she wouldn't have gone outside without her phone. There was also broken glass found throughout the apartment that was on her bedside table, kind of on her bed, and there was also in the kitchen and in the living room on the shaggy rug. Mandy felt like something looked off in the apartment and something didn't look right to her. Rachel's apartment was never cordoned off, nor forensics went into the apartment as she was told there would be. At this stage, Mandy and the family didn't feel like they could trust the police and what they were saying to them. They hadn't fingerprinted Rachel's apartment or went into it as far as they knew. So the family really felt like they couldn't trust the police because they hadn't followed through on anything that they had been saying to them. So with not knowing what to do, Mandy decided to clean up Rachel's apartment to keep busy and kind of felt like she could be close to Rachel through doing that kind of action. Unknowingly cleaning up any potential evidence in Rachel's apartment, Mandy hadn't heard back from the detective and they never showed up to the hospital again, leaving the family lost and confused as to what was going on. The police at this stage hadn't contacted Mandy back to say it wasn't a crime, it was ruled as just an accident, and she found this out through the coroner's office a week later. She was then sent an email later saying that it was just an accident and nothing about the aforementioned possible crime. The police had ruled the fall as an accident and told the coroner's office as such. In Rachel's autopsy, there's a snippet of the report and it says, "The circumstances and injuries are consistent with falling backwards down a flight of stairs. However, other scenarios may also provide explanation for the injuries sustained." So that kind of really opens the door up for saying that it isn't just an accident. It can't 100% without reasonable doubt be ruled that she just fell down the stairs. Like, the coroner's office isn't even convinced of that either. The autopsy, everything. It's not a clear-cut situation at all. And where is the evidence that fully says that she just fell down the stairs like the police are saying? The police ruling it as an accident, saying it was just a drunken tumble by Rachel. Because of this, there was no media coverage. No one spoke about the incident. There was no investigation. And Mandy was left with more questions than answers. Her questions of how did she sustain that kind of head injury resulting in death, falling from stairs but no other injuries? Why did they say they would investigate her death as a crime but never investigate? Why did they say they had forensics at her house if they never did? Or did they? Who knows? Or did they just not share the results? Why did they never contact back her family and leave them in the dark? What other scenarios mentioned in the autopsy report that could have caused her head injury, and were they ever actually even looked into? Now I just want to talk about Dr. Jocelyn Peach. She is a registered nurse and has been one for almost 5 decades and also has a doctorate. She was made an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit. And at the time of Rachel's death, Jocelyn was working with victim support and was allocated to Rachel's distressed family. Victim support get a referral from the police and they follow up the care of the family. Jocelyn was shocked at how many questions their family had regarding how Rachel died. Questions about the police, her apartment, what had happened to Rachel before the fall. She also felt like this was a high-risk situation because of the active investigation into the crime committed against Rachel at the time of her alleged fall. She didn't understand why the contact person from the police hadn't explained what was going on to the family and why they weren't doing more. She felt like they were left and it wasn't being handled as a criminal investigation nor a homicide. It wasn't confirmed to be a homicide or an accident, and the police are the ones who brought up the matter of it potentially being a crime. Jocelyn went to the police station with the family as they all felt like the police were never going to follow up with them. Jocelyn made a point of saying at the police station that they won't be leaving here today until someone talked to them about the investigation. And from the sounds of it, Jocelyn, she took quite a stern voice with the police because she wanted the police to listen to them and to take them seriously. Jocelyn felt like Rachel's case of falling down the stairs was being viewed as an isolated incident, and that they weren't linking the possibility of the prior burglary and the sexual assault case together. They pointed out to the police that Rachel felt threatened every time she left her apartment in Auckland. Rachel had PTSD from the prior attack and struggled living in a town where five people who attacked her were also there. Also, the fact that she only knew what one of them looked like and was scared that they would recognize her if she left her apartment. The police on the 8th of May 2022 took a statement from Mandy saying, "My partner Leon and myself met with Constable," they didn't give the name, "outside Auckland Hospital, and he advised me that the incident involving Rachel was being treated as a possible crime. The police had cornered off Rachel's address and a forensic examination was to be taken. He advised me that the police from the crime unit knew who Rachel was due to the previous involvement with the police as a victim," end quote. Jocelyn felt like this case had been mishandled so badly that it's one of the reasons why she chose to quit and leave her job in victim support. She felt she couldn't help in the way she wanted to, and felt Rachel and her family were immensely let down. Unfortunately, for the trial regarding the sexual assault of Rachel, it never made it to trial. As Rachel died a month before the trial, no charges were ever made as the key witness in the assault died. After Rachel died, Mandy wanted answers, and the more she thought about Rachel's case, she felt too that she was also let down. Mandy decided to use the Official Information Act to request documents and information she could get her hands on. The trial for the alleged sexual assault case wasn't just postponed after Rachel died, the charges were dropped against the main offender. In June 2022, there are many internal emails sent between police regarding the charges of the sexual assault. On the 31st of May 2022 at 5:13 p.m., one of the most senior police officers in Auckland emails another senior police officer, quote, "concern regarding Crown withdrawal sexual violation charged due to victim dying. Could you review the following matter? A police prosecutor came and saw me this afternoon as they had concern regarding the Crown wanting to withdraw these charges following the tragic death of victim in this matter, Rachel Molloy." It also says the prosecutor has concern regarding Molloy's next of kin wanting accountability for their daughter following the offending. Then says to ensure the victim and the next of kin's interests are being managed against judicial expediency to resolve the matter, end quote. Basically asking for the matter to be reviewed about the charges about the sexual assault after Rachel has passed away. Though the charges were dropped against the offender in the sexual violation case, Rachel's mum, Manny, wanted justice for her daughter for the original crime committed against her and didn't want the charges dropped against the offender, and threatened to go to the media about the crime. Following this conversation Manny had with the police an email was sent out on the 2nd of the 6th, 2022 at 7:21 a.m. saying she has made mention that she is prepared to go to the media. Given the sensitivity and possible media risk, I thought I would flag this with you. Then 2 hours later, there was a large email chain following on the conversation, but unfortunately, it has been redacted by the police. Basically meaning they are allowed to withhold those emails for privacy reasons and legal privilege. So even if you ask to view those emails under the Official Information Act, you'll get them sent out to you, but the emails will be all blacked out, so you can't read anything on them. The emails that have been redacted are pages long and really makes you think what are in those emails that they can't publicly share. And also, so random, like how are they even allowed to do that? Like, I feel like it's hiding key pieces of information and communication. Then on the 3rd of the 6th, 2022 at 2:57 p.m., an internal police email says, has the necessary follow-up and notification occurred with the Molloy's next of kin, please? Then on the 2nd of the 6th, 2022 at 5:51 p.m., another email says, have we advised the family? If so, how did it go with what was their reaction? Then on the 10th of the 6th, 2022 at 7:21, another internal email says, just an FYI, the charges in the matter have been withdrawn as a result of the complainant Rachel Molloy tragically dying from an accidental death. Then later on the 10th of the 6th, 2022 at 3:01 p.m., an officer emails a superior officer to say, Rachel's mum phoned me today and is not accepting of the current situation. Then on the 10th of the 6th, 2022 at 5:14 p.m., the fallout continues between Rachel's family and the police. The possible fallout with the deceased family surrounding a number of aspects of the withdrawal of charges. End quote. In another part of the email, unhappy with justice system / Crown on the sex burglary matter and the investigation into the 1S, if they are made aware of the support person, things could spiral out of control. And by the way, 1S stands for sudden death, which is what was ruled Rachel's death as. The police have since hidden and redacted the line in the email, quote, if they are made aware of the support person, things could spiral out of control, end quote. Like, what is going on here? Why would things spiral out of control if they're made of the support person? It just really seems sometimes in the judicial system, the main goal gets lost. Justice for a victim and their family, but the politics and ulterior motives take over and it creates a mess of a situation and the investigation, which is happening in this case. Because Mandy had put in several Official Information Acts to get information, documents, emails, etc. from different police officers involved in the case, there was an email sent out by Detective Inspector Scott Beard on the 7th of July 2022 at 7:12 a.m. saying, we need to ensure she does not play both of us off, end quote. I mean, again, what does that mean? It's sad that they view Mandy Molloy in this way. She just wanted answers for her daughter, how they came to the conclusion about her daughter's death and how they ruled it as an accident. She was advocating for her dead daughter. What I find crazy is that the Ministry of Justice left a message on Rachel's phone 4 weeks after she died. Like, she's already dead at this point, and it's well known in the police force that she is, saying that her sexual assault case had been vocated and you don't have to come in and give evidence. I mean, honestly, like, what the hell? Mandy had to listen to this message on Rachel's phone, and of course she didn't need to come in to give evidence. She's dead. Like, the case was dropped because she died. That's the reason why she doesn't need to come in to give evidence also. How could the Ministry of Justice do something like this and make such a big blunder? Mandy went to Auckland in 2022 and had a meeting with Detective Inspector Scott Beard. Mandy felt as though the whole meeting was centered around them trying to make Mandy believe Rachel's death was just an accident. The police believe Rachel's death was an accident, and after this meeting, Mandy went back to Levin and found out there were no forensics carried out on Rachel's unit, so she felt that this would be a crucial piece of evidence in determining the outcome in Rachel's death. So, feeling this way, she sent another email to Scott on the 7th of September 2022. There's a few native words to New Zealand in here, so I apologize if I say these wrong. Quote, "Kia ora, Scott, can you explain to me why there weren't any forensics completed at my daughter's flat, please? After being told many times that they were done. Many thanks, Nagamiya Mandy." Sorry, I feel like I said that wrong. End quote. Mandy, unfortunately, never got a reply back to this email. Then in 2023, Mandy had gotten into contact with an investigative journalist as she felt like she didn't have any answers to the death, to the sexual violation charge, why it was dropped, and she just wanted justice for her daughter. John Campbell...
5 minutes later.
And John Campbell started to investigate and look into the story of Rachel and what was going on. And he asked if he could put in a request to use a camera in the courtroom on the 8th of June to film one of the offenders in the Auckland District Court CBD for one of their trials. But the application was declined as the offender had pled guilty and the case had been moved to the Alcohol and Treatment Court. Sorry, my cat is going crazy next to me. The day before the 7th of June 2023, there was an internal email conversation regarding how Mandy had gone to the media. At 9:20 a.m., it says, "It appears the victim's mother has taken the concerns to the media. The application from John Campbell," end quote. The reply follows at 9:41 a.m., quote, "Thanks for that. I will send this update to the chain on my end just to flag this media risk," end quote. Then another email at 9:46 a.m. "Just flagging this with you. By way of conversation, Amanda Malloy mentioned that she was going to engage an investigative journalist. It appears that she has done this," quote, end quote. Another email at 9:51 a.m. "Just flagging this with you so you are aware of probable media interest relation to this," end quote. Then a well-known senior police officer, Detective Inspector Scott Beard, that Mandy had met up with in 2022, sent an email at 12:31 p.m. quote, "If any media question comes through, please let me know as I should be answering them," end quote. Mandy didn't know this whole chain of conversation had been taken place, and it's hard to understand why they are so focused on flagging this media risk and not actually answering any of her questions. If we look at the facts of the evidence that we do actually know what happened to Rachel on the night of the 4th of May 2022, Rachel was found with her head on the footpath, which was at the bottom of the 10 concrete stairs leading up to her front door at her unit. Her body was over the bottom of the stairs and she was on her back with the impact to the back of her skull. There are no other visible injuries and she was outside without her phone, which was very unlike her, and the last time she had been using her phone was 8 p.m. that night. The police were called just after 11 p.m. on 111 and the ambulance was not called. In the 111 phone call with police, a girl arrives home and she can see Rachel's body from the long driveway from her car that's just out in the front of the units. She tells the police she doesn't know what her unit number is, but you'll be able to see her as soon as you come down the driveway. You can see her body clearly, even in the dark, at 11 p.m. at night. The 111 police responder clarifies, "You think she's fallen?" The girl says, "Yes, Her whole lights and everything are on. Her front door is open and her lights are on. The police officer asked if the girl checked on Rachel or called out to her. She said, "Nah." The police said, "You weren't close enough to ask her if she was all right." And the girl said, "Oh, I'm not going by her." So Rachel wasn't seen by anyone until police arrived on scene because the neighbor refused to get out and go check on Rachel, see if she had a pulse, see if she was okay, see if she was responding. Nothing. She just called the police. At least she did that, but she refused to get out to go and check on her. And then also parallel to Rachel's building, where her unit was, there is another building of units that they are both facing each other. As the windows and front doors of each building directly face each other, you might think someone saw something in the other apartment building. So the investigative journalist went and asked some of the people living in the building across the driveway in the parallel unit block if they were ever interviewed by the police, and they said that they weren't. And again, the evidence that we also know is that Rachel's phone was found on the couch in her apartment 48 hours after she had fallen. There was also broken glass on the shaggy rug in the living room, in the kitchen, and in the bedroom next to the bedside table and the bed. Rachel was found with socks on at the time of her death. She had no cuts to her feet, though throughout her apartment there was glass all through the floor. She had no shoes on or anything. So Mandy also felt like that was kind of odd. Rachel never cleaned up the glass, and if there was so much glass throughout their apartment, how did she not have any kind of cut to her foot or anything like that? Then in 2024, September the 28th, Friday, 4:09 p.m., Mandy received an email from the coroner saying that she will be doing an inquest into Rachel's death. It's taken 2 years to get to this point, and Rachel's family feel like that they've finally been heard after the scrutiny, and feeling like they are not being heard finally might get some closure that they need about how Rachel died. At 5:08 p.m. on the 27th of the 9th, 2024, Friday, after months of trying to tee up a time with Detective Inspector Scott Beard for an interview with John Campbell. An hour after Mandy received her email from the coroner, John Campbell received a statement from Scott saying, "Firstly, would like to acknowledge Miss Malloy's family for the loss they have experienced. Miss Malloy's death in 2022 remains subject of an ongoing coronial process, so at this point we are unable to provide fulsome comment around specifics. Police are open to providing further comment once coronial findings have been released in this case. In regard to 2020 matters, 5 people were charged over a burglary to Miss Malloy's apartment following a thorough police investigation. A person was charged in relation to sexual assault on the complainant. Based on information provided during the first report to police, the matter was coded as theft. As standard practice, volume crime reports such as theft or burglary area initially filed pending further information or evidence. This includes forensic evidence. 2 days after a report was made, scene of the crime officers conducted a scene examination at the apartment. While these staff spoke with Miss Malloy, she disclosed further information about what had occurred, including the possibility that a sexual assault had occurred. Given this information, they escalated the matter to the Criminal Investigation Branch and a thorough investigation commenced, resulting in those arrests. 3 have since been convicted, 1 remains before the court, and a 5th person's charges were withdrawn. Police created an additional file around the sexual assault matter. 1 person was charged with sexual violation by unlawful sexual connection. As the time of Miss Malloy's death, the matter was still before the court. the issue for prosecution of the individual as a round consent to address consent, the complainant would be required to give evidence. Due to Ms. Malloy's death, this was unfortunately no longer possible and the charge was withdrawn. Police and the Crown met with Ms. Malloy's mother to explain the legal reasoning for withdrawing the charge. We acknowledge there could have been improved coordination, communication with Ms. Malloy around 2020 matters at that time. I feel the statement kind of stated the obvious and didn't really add anything new. Mandy also felt annoyed by this letter and feels like the questions have not been answered again by the police. Campbell, prior to this statement being released, had, you know, planned a day to go to Auckland to talk to Detective Inspector Scott, and then all of a sudden they couldn't get a hold of him. Then he was away on leave, and then he was back, and then they'd make the date, couldn't get a hold of him, could get a hold of someone else, then the date was cancelled. And then, then they were going to Auckland again to meet with him, and then whatever else, it was cancelled. It just feels like it just kept happening where, like, he was purposely avoiding talking to the media. And I feel like that also is displayed in the emails. We see in the internal emails where they're openly talking about the media risk because they don't want any chance of any slip-ups or letting out any information, or it feels like taking any accountability for their role in screwing up parts of the investigation. And then instead of actually ever meeting with the media, never actually having a face-to-face conversation like he said he would with Campbell, he ends up just setting out this statement letter. So at least Mandy, hopefully, and the family will get some kind of closure pending what comes out of this inquest. The reason why I wanted to talk about this is, I guess it could also be viewed as it's not necessarily a true crime because we don't have the answers, but that's the thing, is I feel like we don't have the answers. Like, she had a terrible assault in 2020 where she didn't get justice for. It was mishandled by the police. I feel like there wasn't really any accountability from the police. And then when she passes away, it's mishandled again. The family are mistreated. There's no clear communication. And all of this, I feel like, could have been avoided if the police had just been better at really just maybe doing their job and communicating with the family. And I really hope that they get the answers that they are searching for closure, so they can also continue on living their life as best they can after, of course, losing a family member. And we get to find out what actually happened to Rachel, and was it a fall or was it something else? You know, where were the people that attacked her, the five suspects, the night that she was found at the bottom of her steps? You know, where were they? Did they take any of those things into consideration? Will this be looked into in the inquest? Because I feel like that's also important, not just to look at the logistics and like the actual mechanics of someone falling down the steps and landing in that way, but also where were these people? You know, she was frightened for her life when she'd go out in public. So yeah, that'd be great to find out. And just hearing the story about what John Campbell had investigated, hearing Mandy Malloy, like, it's really heartbreaking, and you just see the pain that they're living with every day over losing a loved one and having no closure. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my depiction of the story. And if you want to go to, if you're in New Zealand or you do end up having access to it, I will link it down below, the 6-part series that John Campbell has on the Rachel Malloy, what really happened to her. And I think it's on TVNZ or One News, but I'll definitely link it down below. And I'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.